All right. We know what happened last Wednesday evening. Absalom was being mourned by David. In the end of chapter 18, the very last verse kind of sums up the king and his feelings. Verse 33 of chapter 18, "And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said this," or thus, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, O Absalom, my son." And so that chapter ends with his lament over the passing of his son. And of course, it's right after that that we have chapter 9 beginning, where the first four verses talk about his grief, David's grief over Absalom. And there's a great lesson I think we can learn from it. Would someone read the first four verses now of 2 Samuel 19?
"And it was told Joab, behold, the king weepeth and mourneth for Absalom. And the victory that day was turned into mourning unto all the people. For the people heard say that day how the king was grieved for his son. And the people gat them by stealth that day into the city, as people being ashamed steal away when they flee in battle. But the king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son, my son."
All right. There's certainly no doubt that as a father he was grief-stricken over the loss of his son. He knew what his son was like because over the past time he had been, it had become very evident what kind of person Absalom was. He was very proud and arrogant. He was deceitful. He was rebellious. Was not concerned about God and God's authority or God's anointed one. So it was very obvious what kind of person he was, but David was still grief-stricken, and he was so discouraged or despondent that he had said that, I wish it had been me, basically. I wish it had been me that had died instead of him. But notice the result of the king and his emotions and feelings. As the king, he couldn't just think about himself. I guess that's the point. He had to think about the entire nation. And so even though he had these strong feelings of grief and sorrow, he still had to remember that he was God's chosen leader over the people, and he had a responsibility to them, not just his son. And so notice what happened to the people. How would you describe the people? Even though they had won the victory, what were they like?
They slunk off.
Yeah. They were ashamed, or that's how it puts it, right? And they were ashamed. So what should have been, the author says, a celebration, a great day of victory, because for the nation of Israel it was a great day of victory. And it should have been a time of celebration. They had defeated what amounted to, at that time, the enemy, God's enemy. So they should have been happy, but because the people knew how grief-stricken David was, well, they were just kind of slinking off to the side. And the king kept covering his face and kept saying the same thing over and over again. Oh, my son, oh, Absalom, my son. So he kept saying that over and over and over again. And so, you know, this was a time as king where David needed to focus on uniting the nation. There were priorities, and the nation, God's people, took priority over David's feelings over his son. And so that's what David had to think about. So there, I think the lesson we take from that is sometimes we have to put our feelings aside for what we would call the greater good. And that's what David didn't do. And he needed to be doing that. He needed to be thinking about the entire nation, not just his own feelings. For us, you know, when we're having difficult times like that and we're despondent and discouraged, you know, one of the best things to do is get involved in doing something good, because it gets your mind off of it.
We can always
always find someone that's worse off than
you. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. That's exactly right. And certainly David could have found many of those people. Yeah, he could have. He could have found many. So that's how our story, our narrative starts here with David. And Joab, in verse 1, was told that the king is weeping and mourning. And so now we go down to see Joab's response. Notice his response beginning in verse 5. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, "Today you've disgraced all your servants who today have saved your life, the lives of your sons and daughters, the lives of your wives, and the lives of your concubines, in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. If you've declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants, for today I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died today, then it would have pleased you well." Boy, Joab's just going straight at it. I mean, that's the absolute honest truth he was telling him. Were Joab not known for being, you know, very kind and considerate? Yeah, that's true. Not at all. He does.
It looked to me like Joab.
Oh, I think he's had his own motives from the very beginning. Definitely. And he's coming right out to David and telling him what he thinks about the whole situation. You know, you've disgraced your servants. They've saved your life, which they had. They had saved David's life and the lives of these others. And it says in that you love your enemies and hate your friends. Well, Absalom had become his enemy, even though it was his son. And I know how bad the situation when father and son are enemies, but that's basically what the situation was here.
Do you think maybe this is one reason why David's so highly spoken of all through the Bible? Because he could love his enemies?
Probably so. Oh, well, that's one of the characteristics, I would imagine. One of his qualities or traits. And probably one of the things that's hardest to do, too, I would imagine. I really would. I would think that's one of the hardest things to do.
What do you think Joab's motivations were for killing Absalom, even though he knew that David wanted him alive? You think he did that out of spite? Or do you think he did that because he thought that it was better for the kingdom?
I don't think we can know that question or the answer to it. Pardon?
I said, you're not going to guess either.
No, I'm not going to guess. One of those things we'll find out one day. We can guess, like we said, yes.
Yeah, I would think Joab was really political. And I'm not saying he necessarily thought it was altogether good for the kingdom, but I think he thought in his own heart, I think he did. He might have had other motives for that.
Mm-hmm. Other reasons for doing it. Very, very possible. We see, you know, Joab has a long history, and we've talked about him for many weeks, different things he's been involved in. And the more things you see about him that he does, you see, again, what kind of person he is.
I don't know how he lived as long as he did. Because most people
yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I think David had put up with him, if you want to use that expression, for quite a long time. And Joab, there was no doubt that he was a good military person, that he had shown that he was good, good in a fight, I guess is the word. But that's not always the best thing to have in a person, is good in a fight. But that's who he was and what he was. And we find out more about him because after he says that, you know, Joab says, "You've declared today that you regard neither princes nor servants, for I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all of us had died, then it would have pleased you well. Now, therefore, arise, go out and speak comfort to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go out, not one will stay with you this night. And that will be worse for you than all the evil that has befallen you from your youth until now." Now, whether that would have happened or not, I don't know. But Joab can also tell. He's pretty good at telling how people are going to react. And what he tells David is that if you don't go out and say something to these people, the ones that they put their lives on the line for you, if you don't go out and say something to them and give them comfort, then their allegiance is gone. And I'm sure that would have been true of at least some of them. And that's what Joab tells them. So it'll be worse than all the other bad things that's happened to you. So the king arose and sat in the gate, and they told all the people, saying, "There is the king sitting in the gate." So all the people came before the king, for every one of Israel had fled to his tent. David had to do what was right as king. Oh, I'm sorry.
Regardless of Joab's motives, he told the king what he needed to hear.
Yep, and it wasn't pleasant.
No, it wasn't.
That's true.
It wasn't a pleasant thing to hear.
Yeah.
But he needed to be told that.
Yeah, he was. David was having kind of a. He was feeling sorry for himself. And, you know, rightfully so or not, he was definitely feeling sorry for himself. And Joab probably kind of shook him up with those statements. I get that from the text. He shook him up, kind of, you know, slapped him on the face, you know, to kind of wake up and say, "Hey, you know, I understand Absalom is dead, but remember, he might have been your son, but he was also your enemy. And he was not just David's enemy. He was God's enemy, which is far more important. Absalom was God's enemy." Yes?
And I would think that if it had been Joab's ultimate goal to usurp the authority of David,
mm-hmm.
that he would not have helped David. He would not have told him this. If Joab wanted to usurp his authority, and he could have just let things go on like it was,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And the people and David would have lost allegiance. So
yeah.
It looks kind of like Joab's got the best interests of David at heart. What I don't understand is why he killed his son.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's a complex person in some respects. He might have had all kind of things that were going through his mind. And since the text doesn't tell us, you know, a lot of it is just kind of guessing. But we learn more about him here. Also, so it goes on and says, "Now all the people were in a dispute throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'The king saved us from the hand of our enemies. He delivered us from the hand of the Philistines, and now he's fled from the land because of Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing back the king?'" And so that starts this next section about David and him returning. And notice what the response is. So King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, okay, saying, "Speak to the elders of Judah, saying..." And remember, Judah is primarily the two southern tribes of Israel. "Why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the words of all Israel have come to the king to his very house? You're my brethren, you're my bone and my flesh. Why then are you the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa, 'Are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if you're not commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab.'" Now, what's the purpose of these priests? What are these priests trying to get Judah to do, or the people of Judah? Yeah, come back to David. Remember, they had supported Absalom. So these priests, and David has sent them, of course, they're religious leaders, right, as priests. So he's telling them, go to the people of Judah and basically, you know, try and persuade them to do what they need to do. And of course, that's, you know, what we're still trying to do today, trying to persuade people to do what they need to do. That part hasn't changed. But in this particular case, trying to gather them together, encourage them to bring David back to Jerusalem as king. And he mentions Amasa. Here's a new person here about saying, "Are you not my bone and my flesh?" And he says what? God do so to me and more also, if you're not commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. So what's he doing?
Putting Joab out.
Okay. Joab is now out.
Man,
right?
Joab wanted to man up,
yep. You're gone. You're now out. And there could have been multiple reasons for that. Obviously, one of them has to do with Absalom. So he swayed the hearts of all the men of Judah, just as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word to the king, return you and all your servants. So, Amasa is the one that's going to be put in charge of the army. And
Absalom had made Amasa the captain of his army.
Amasa had been basically the leader of the other army. And in essence, that's he's basically, David is switching. Okay, Joab has been his commander, and so now he's going to the other side, what were the enemies, and taking their leader and making him the leader over David's. And probably to help secure, you know, the allegiance of the other people. Of course, that would be one way to do it. Take their leader, their commander, and make him now the commander of this new army. And so that would be one way to do it, to kind of bond and make that make the army and the nation much more secure, kind of cemented together. Probably a difficult thing to do, but at the same time, probably a wise thing to do at the same time. So let's see what happens. So the king returned and came to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to go to meet the king, to escort the king across the Jordan. So the king returns. He's coming across the Jordan, headed back to Jerusalem. That's where he's supposed to be. That's the nation's capital. And David now, kind of from here to most of the rest of the chapter, starts to tie up loose ends. There's a lot of loose ends in David's life with different people. And there's three of them he mentions now. I don't know if we'll get to all three of them tonight. But there's three different people, and he's trying to tie up some loose ends. And you know how good that feels when you've got some loose end and needs to be tied up, and you finally get to do it. Well, that's what David is doing the rest of this chapter. He's tying up some loose ends. Here's the first one. And Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There are 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they went over the Jordan before the king. Then a ferry boat went across to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. Now Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king when he had crossed the Jordan. And he said to the king, do not let my lord impute iniquity to me, or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered him, said, shall not Shimei be put to death for this? Because he cursed the Lord's anointed. And David said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? For do I not know that today I am king over Israel? Therefore the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king swore to him. Okay. Someone want to bring us up to speed about Shimei? What had he done? Yeah. Cursed him, remember, as he was going by and threw rocks at him. Okay. This was God's anointed. And this guy is throwing rocks at him, cursing him as God's anointed. And, of course, later on we find out more about Shimei and what happens to him, but that's down the road. But anyway, on this day, and notice how David emphasizes on this day. He says, verse 22, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should be adversaries to me today? Shall any man be put to death today in Israel? Today was to be a day of celebration and life. It wasn't to be a day of death. And so when Abishai says, why don't you put him to death? He cursed you, the anointed, he threw rocks at you. Why don't you kill him? David says, nobody's going to die today. There's been enough death, basically, is what he's saying. There's been enough death. There's not going to be any more death today. Today's going to be a day of celebration of life, and we're not going to have any more death today. I am king over Israel. You know, he says, I have this authority. There's not going to be any more death. And this was just a temporary stay of execution. Years later, things would be opposite or different for Shimei. But I think it was really important for Shimei to confess that he had done wrong. We don't know how sincere he was, but he did say, know that I have sinned. And I'm the first one to come down today of all the house of Joseph to meet you. So he wants that to be known, that, you know, I'm the first one to come down here. I have done wrong. I shouldn't have cursed you. I shouldn't have thrown rocks at you. I know what I've done was wrong. But it was essential for him, I think, to make that confession that he had done wrong. And, of course, that's true. And that's a very important thing today for us. You know, we can't, when we've wronged somebody, just because time passes, the passage of time is not the same thing as asking forgiveness. You know, time doesn't mean anything to God. So whether we've wronged somebody yesterday or 50 years ago doesn't make any difference. If we've not asked to be forgiven, then we're not forgiven, because time doesn't erase those things. Time doesn't have the power to do it. So it was very important for Shimei here to make that confession and say that he had done wrong. And then the second loose end that David begins to tie up is Mephibosheth. Now Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. And he had not cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he returned in peace. So it was, when he had come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? And remember, this was when David had been lied to about Mephibosheth, and he'd end up giving his stuff to Ziba instead. So the king is asking Mephibosheth, why didn't you go with me? And so he answers, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me, in talking about Ziba. For your servant said, I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on and go to the king, because your servant is lame. And he slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your eyes. Do what's good in your eyes. Mephibosheth isn't asking for the moon. He's not asking for everything to be restored. He is saying, this is my servant Ziba lied to you. What he told you was not the truth. And if you've ever, anyone's ever lied to someone about you, you know exactly how Mephibosheth has been feeling. And this was severe because David had taken all of Mephibosheth's stuff and given it to the servant Ziba. So he says, do what's good in your eyes, for all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who eat at your own table. Therefore, what right have I still to cry out any more to the king? So the king said to him, why do you speak any more of your matters? I have said, you and Ziba divide the land. Then Mephibosheth said to the king, rather let him take it all, inasmuch as my lord the king has come back in peace to his own house. How would you describe the difference between Ziba on the one hand and Mephibosheth on the other, looking at what he says here at the end of the account? What do you see in Mephibosheth's character? What kind of person would you say he was from what he told David?
Gracious.
Gracious, okay. He was gracious. Humble, all right. That's right. He said, now remember, it all belonged to him. And now David is saying, well, let's split it up. We'll give half to Ziba, who had lied about the whole situation. Let's give half to Ziba, half to back to you. And he comes back and says, you don't even have to do that. What's important to me is that the fact that you've came back in peace to your own house. So like you all said, he had a good spirit, good attitude. He was generous. He wasn't selfish in any way at all. And that says a lot about him, considering how he had been wronged.
He and Ziba were just opposites.
Yeah, they were. They couldn't have been more opposite. Yes.
He sounded a lot like his father.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a good point, too. He had learned something, apparently, about what kind of spirit or attitude that he needed to have. That's back in 2 Samuel 16, but I don't think we really have time to go back and read that. But David hears the true story and finds out the truth about Mephibosheth and what kind of person he really was and what kind of person Ziba was instead. And there's a, you know, he was a very submissive person when he came to the king, and I think that's a great spirit to have. Now, I think our time is up, so we'll stop there, and Lord willing, we'll start with verse 31 next week.